That you have invited me to be here, as was mentioned in the announcements. The Pattons have known not me personally all of my life, but they have known my family since before I came around. And I don't know if it's safe to say that I've been adopted into the Sutton family, but I'm a part of it because I married into it, and they're stuck with me whether they like that or not. So I do have some connections here, and it's always good to go to a place where you have some connections. But even if I didn't know them, I would know that I have family in Christ here. And that's just a comfort to know that I can go anywhere and I can meet people of common faith and people who have a similar interest in spiritual things. And that's always comforting. So thank you for being here tonight. And I hope the time that we spend together will be valuable. I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to the book of Habakkuk. The book of Habakkuk. I'm going to give you a minute to turn there. You may not turn there real often. But I want to just say I really have a fond appreciation for some of these Old Testament books of prophecy. We'll stay in Habakkuk for our whole sermon. So once you find it, just stay there. I know that many of the things that were told and written by the prophets had a very immediate meaning. It was a message that pertained to the original hearers in many cases. But there's a lot that we can learn from God's interaction with men. If you really want to know how God responds to obedience and disobedience, just take a look into the books of prophecy and you'll have a very clear picture of how God understands to both righteousness and unrighteousness. If you ever wonder, is God really all that serious about sin? Is God really all that concerned about rebellion? Well, just spend a little bit of time looking in some of these books of prophecy. And I don't think you'll have any doubt that God is serious about unrighteousness and sin and rebellion. And so, from these books, I think we see, we learn a lot from God and His dealings in the past. Now, Habakkuk is a favorite of mine for a few different reasons. For one, it's a book in which assurance is not hard to find. You know, in many of these books of prophecy, what you find is this really heavy emphasis on the fact that God's people had not been what they needed to be. They were failures at being the people of God. And so there's a heavy emphasis on their failure. There's a heavy emphasis on the wrath of God to come. And certainly we need to see that. But I like a book like Habakkuk, where righteous people are able to see some hope for being righteous. And we see a lot of that in Habakkuk. Habakkuk is written from the perspective of a righteous man. And that's not to imply that the other prophets weren't righteous men. But Habakkuk writes in such a way that gives us a perspective that I think we can relate to. And that's even really shown in the way the book begins. You know, if you open up to many of these books where the introduction is made, it will say that the word of the Lord came to this prophet or this prophet or this prophet. And typically what happens is God has observed wickedness among His people. And He wants to send a warning through a prophet. And so God summons a prophet and it'll say the word of the Lord came to. But Habakkuk is a little bit different than that. This book actually starts out with Habakkuk observing the wickedness all around him. And he is the one crying out to God. And I think that makes this book just a little bit more compelling to me, and maybe it's a little more compelling to you. See, I can't relate to God calling me the way He called Jonah and said, go to Nineveh, or the way He called Elijah to go to His people. I can't relate to that. But I can relate to a man like Habakkuk, a righteous man that's seeing wicked all around him and he's just calling out to God. Here's a man that's just having a hard time understanding how things can be the way that they are. And he's wondering, is God even seeing all the wickedness that's going on? Is God going to respond? I think you and I can relate to a man like Habakkuk who just looks around him and he sees turmoil and distress and wickedness and sin and he just wonders, why is this happening? Right now, you and I can relate to that. I'm very aware right now of a lot of good, righteous people that are trying hard to serve God and they're struggling through life in some way. They're dealing with a difficulty. They're dealing with turmoil. And I know an awful lot of people who have no desire at all to be righteous. And they're doing just fine. There's a great injustice, it seems, in the world. And sometimes, like Habakkuk, we just look and we wonder why that is. Habakkuk was a troubled man, but as God reveals more and more to him, what he sees is some assurance for a righteous man. And that's what I want us to see tonight as we spend a few minutes in the book of Habakkuk. I want to point out five different things, five different assurances we find in the book of Habakkuk for righteous people. And the first one is that God is always listening. I want you to notice something from the first four verses of the book. Notice with me, it says, "The oracle which Habakkuk the prophet saw, 'How long, O Lord, will I call for help, and you will not hear? I cry out to you violence, yet you do not save. Why do you make me see iniquity and cause me to look on wickedness? Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contention arises. Therefore the law is ignored and justice is never upheld, for the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore justice comes out perverted.'" You notice what Habakkuk sees as he looks around him? He sees violence. He sees strife and contention, the laws being ignored, justice is not being upheld. The wicked are surrounding the righteous. And not only is he upset at the injustice that he sees in the world, Habakkuk seems to be upset because he doesn't even know if God is seeing this. Is God feeling this? Is this being ignored? It's almost as if God is not hearing, or at least God just doesn't care enough to respond. Notice his questions. His questions to God, "How long am I going to have to cry out for help? God, I cry violence, but you're not saving. God, why are you allowing me to see this iniquity?" And I think there's a couple of things that we need to appreciate in Habakkuk's response to God. For one, I think we need to appreciate how much wickedness bothered this righteous man. Wickedness should always upset righteous people. The world we live in today, I think, could be described just almost identical to the way that Habakkuk just described. And it ought to bother us deeply that there's sin and wickedness all around us. And I think we need to appreciate just how bothered he is when he sees sin. And so here's just a word of caution for any Christian, any child of God. If wickedness does not bother you, there's a problem. And I'm afraid there are some who wear the name of Christ that are not all that bothered about wickedness. As a matter of fact, not only does it not upset them, some of them participate in it. But here's a righteous man and he's tremendously upset because of wickedness. I think we need to appreciate that about him. And here's another thing we should appreciate about Habakkuk. And that is how honest he is with God. I'm not sure if we know it's okay to just be honest with God. Habakkuk is. In his distress, he says, "God, where are you? I'm crying out. You're not listening. You're not saving. Why am I seeing this?" And I don't think for a minute that his questioning God is disrespectful. I think he's just being open with God as to how he feels. I think he's telling God, "This is what's going on. This is what I'm seeing, God. I know you, a righteous, holy God, I know you're not okay with it, and I'm not okay with it either. I'm just not understanding it." And I think we need to be the very same way when we're communicating with God. Be open with God. Be honest with God about what we're seeing and what we're feeling and what we're dealing with. You know, it's not as if we can really hide how we feel from God anyway. And so we might as well be open. And what I see from Habakkuk is just a very sincere approach to God. But nonetheless, Habakkuk seems to think that God's not listening. Here I am crying out and you're not hearing. And he just maybe assumes that God is just not here right now. Maybe he just assumes that God's not hearing. But God does assure him that he's hearing. And that brings me to the second assurance, and that is that God is always active. I wanted you to notice what God responds to Habakkuk in the fifth verse. This is God saying to Habakkuk, look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days. Now, as far as Habakkuk could tell, God wasn't doing anything. He's just allowing anything and everything to go on. It's not being controlled. Nothing is changing. Nothing is happening. I think Habakkuk just assumes that if I'm not seeing God actively do something, then God must not be doing anything. But God says, I want you to look. I want you to observe. I want you to be astonished because I am doing something. That's really all Habakkuk needed was the assurance that God is hearing. And you know, you and I may be a whole lot like Habakkuk. We encounter problems in life and maybe it's due to the wickedness of the world around us, or maybe there's something personal in our lives. And we might pray about it, and maybe we are open to God and we're honest with how we're feeling, and we pour ourselves out and we express all this to God, and we don't get an immediate response, and things just continue as they were, and things don't seem to get any better, and maybe we're left thinking, well, God's just not doing anything. But that's not a fair assumption. Because just like with Habakkuk, it's very possible that God is actively working. We're just not able to see what God is doing. And it may be that if we did know what God was doing, we wouldn't believe it anyway. I intentionally left off the last phrase of verse 5, but notice what God said. Look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days you would not believe if you were told. Maybe God didn't feel compelled to tell Habakkuk exactly what he was doing because he maybe in the feeble mind of a human, maybe you just wouldn't understand. And that seems to be what God implies, is you just wouldn't understand. And that's the third assurance for righteous people, is that it's okay to not know everything. I think sometimes we get a little bit too caught up. We get a little bit too worried in life when we don't know the answer to everything, when we don't know how everything's going to turn out. We get a little bit upset and we get a little bit uncomfortable. But I think it's perfectly okay for righteous people to just not know everything. We don't always understand. We won't always understand how God works and why God does some things. Sometimes in biblical conversations, people will ask me questions that there's really just no way of knowing. And sometimes this may just sound like a cop-out, but I just say, if I knew everything, I would be God. The fact is I'm not God. I don't know everything. And you're not going to know everything either. And that's okay. And so here's Habakkuk. He's wondering, is God seeing this? Is God hearing this? Is God doing anything at all? And God says, well, I actually am, but you wouldn't believe it if I told you. And God was exactly right. Notice what God tells him. God goes on to tell Habakkuk what his plan is, starting in verse 6. For behold, I'm raising up the Chaldeans, that fierce and impetuous people who march throughout the earth to seize dwelling places which are not theirs. They are dreaded and feared. Their justice and authority originate with themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards and keener than wolves in the evening. Their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping down to devour. All of them come for violence. Their horde of faces move forward. They collect captives like sand. They mock at kings, and rulers are a laughing matter to them. They laugh at every fortress and reap up rubble to capture it. Then they will sweep through like the wind and pass on. But they will be held guilty, they whose strength is their God. And so here's God revealing to Habakkuk what His plan is, what He's going to do. And His plan is to raise up Babylon. That's the Chaldeans mentioned here. I'm going to raise up the Babylonians, and I'm going to have them come handle the unrighteousness that's going on in Judah. And Habakkuk can't really understand that. Of course, that's exactly what God said. If I told you, you wouldn't understand. You wouldn't believe. Notice what Habakkuk's response is starting in verse 12. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We will not die. You, O Lord, have appointed them to judge, and you, O Rock, have established them to correct. Your eyes are too pure to approve evil, and you cannot look on wickedness with favor. Why do you look with favor on those who deal treacherously? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? Why have you made men like the fish of the sea, like creeping things without a ruler over them? The Chaldeans bring all them with a hook, drag them away with their net, and gather them together in their fishing net. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they offer a sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their fishing net, because through these their catch is large and their food is plentiful. Will they therefore empty their net and continually slay nations without sparing? You see the struggle Habakkuk's having now that God told him what he's going to do? You're going to raise up the Chaldeans, the Babylonians. How can you do something like that? How can you, a holy, a righteous God, how can you do something so favorable towards a nation that's so wicked? God, your eyes can't approve wickedness. You can't look upon evil with favor. So how is it that you're going to allow Babylon, of all nations, how are you going to allow them to be successful? Now Habakkuk knows that Judah is wicked. That's what he's crying out about. He's crying out for God to do something about the wickedness of Judah. So Habakkuk knows that Judah's wicked, but he knows Babylon's even worse. And so his reasoning says, God, how can you take a wicked nation, a nation more wicked than this nation, to have them punish wicked? That just didn't make sense in his mind. And you know, sometimes in our mind, there may be things going on that just don't make sense, just like in the mind of Habakkuk. And we're left to wonder, well, why is God doing this? Why is this happening in this way, and why is it not happening this way? Habakkuk may have very well had a better idea in his mind as to how God could have punished Judah. But God had His way. And Habakkuk just didn't understand that. And I think what we're reminded of in Habakkuk is that God will use all kinds of men. God will use all kinds of nations, great nations, poor nations. He will use good men and wicked men. He'll use all sorts of things to work out His plans and His purposes. And here's evidence of that. God is going to work out a purpose. He's got a purpose and a plan, and He's going to use a nation. In this case, He's going to use a wicked nation to punish. And we may be like Habakkuk and just say, why? Did you notice in that section that we just read, three different times Habakkuk said, why? 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 But God goes on to assure Habakkuk that this is not how things are going to be forever. As a matter of fact, He goes on to say, Babylon's going to get what's coming to them. They will be destroyed. That's really what the whole chapter, the whole second chapter seems to be about. Now, I'm not going to read that whole second chapter, but I want you to just kind of walk down the chapter with me. And God is pointing out to Habakkuk, here's some detail as to exactly what I'm seeing. Notice, starting there in the fourth verse, Habakkuk, God says that He has seen the pride of men. In the verse, in the following verse, in verse 5, talks about a man that can't stay home. I think the idea there is here is a man who's not satisfied, he's not content with what he has, he's always out looking to conquer more, looking to take more, looking to gain more. And what God says is, I see the greedy man. I see the prideful man. In verse 6, I see those who have mocked me. I've seen those who make a mockery of others. I've seen those who make unfair dealings in their financial dealings with men. In verse 8, God says, I've seen you loot other people, and now you will be looted. In the 10th verse, God recognizes, I have seen you cut off others for your own gain. In the 15th verse, I've seen those of you who offer wine to your neighbor so that you can take advantage of them. I've seen you entice other people to sin. I've seen, verse 17, the violence and the bloodshed. And then he goes on to say in the 18th verse, what profit is the idol when its maker has carved it? Or an image, a teacher of falsehood? For its maker trusts in his own handiwork when he fashions speechless idols. Woe to him who says to a piece of wood, awake, to a mute stone, arise. And that is your teacher? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all inside it, but the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before Him. You think God was missing anything evil that was going on in the world? He saw every bit of the unrighteousness, the greed, the pride, the stealing, the taking advantage of others, the enticing others to sin. God even saw the absurdity of a man fashioning something and then worshiping it. I see some sarcasm in the words of God here. You've created something and overlaid it with gold, and this is going to be your teacher? You have made something, and now your own handiwork is it's breathless, it's speechless. And that's what you're going to put your trust in? You don't think God sees when people put their trust in foolish things? He sees every bit of it, and that's what He's emphasized to Habakkuk. I've seen it. I think sometimes we may need to do what Habakkuk says there in the first verse. When he's in disbelief, notice what he says there in the second chapter in verse 1. I'll stand on my guard post and station myself on the rampart. I'll keep watch to see what He will speak to me and how I may reply when I am reproved. What Habakkuk seems to be saying is, God, I don't understand exactly what You're doing, and I don't understand why You're doing it this way. But I guess what I'll do is I'll stand by and I'll watch for it to happen. And then notice what he says in the third verse. This is what God says to him. For the vision is yet for the appointed time. It hastens towards the goal, and it will not fall. Though it tarries, wait for it will certainly come. It will not delay. Do you see the assurance that God has given Habakkuk? It'll come. You just wait for it. If you're wondering when this imbalance of justice is going to be corrected, God says, you wait for it. You wait for it, Habakkuk. There are going to be things in this life that go on that you and I just don't understand. And it may be really hard for us to come to terms with some things. It may be really hard for us to just be okay with things as they are. But there's some assurance for righteous people in the words of God that just says, wait for it. Isn't that a glorious thought to know that one day God is going to make everything right? And that really gives me a lot of assurance when I think about this fourth assurance. A lot of confidence to know that God is bigger than everything. You know, there are a lot of things in life that are bigger than me. And they're bigger than you, and they're bigger than all of us put together. There are a lot of things that go on that I just really can't do much about at all. It's not hard to see the state of the world and just be overwhelmed with all of the problems and all of the questions that are going on. One of the hardest things to do right now for me is to sit down and watch the news. It's discouraging. It's depressing. And if you watch it, that's fine. I used to know a man that I would eat breakfast with on a pretty regular basis. And he would be in a fairly ill mood because before we ate breakfast, he would sit down and he would watch the news. And I told him one day, I said, if you want to keep eating breakfast with me, you need to watch cartoons before we come. But that's what the world will do to us. That's what the news that's going on will do for us. And we see this terror that's going on all over the world, and it's getting more and more local. And there's just not a good answer for it. There are people, up until yesterday, that are sending bombs through the mail. And there are people who have assault weapons, and they come into a church or a school, a hospital, and they just start taking innocent lives. Our country couldn't possibly be more divided politically and morally. Even things that are supposed to be kind of a break from reality, that we can just put everything bad to the side and enjoy a game of football or baseball or basketball for a while, we can't even do that anymore because it's political. And there's this argument, well, what are we going to do about guns? And what are we going to do that would allow everybody under the sun to get their way and nobody can be upset about it? Well, what are we going to do with all these problems? Well, you and I aren't going to do much of anything about them. You see, there's just a reality that there are some problems that are bigger than us. I'm not saying there aren't some solutions to cut down on some of the problems in the world, but ultimately, there's just a lot that we're not going to be able to do. But I take a lot of comfort in knowing that my God is bigger than any problem that'll come on our news channel. Or any problem that'll come into our lives. Remember when we were reading in that first chapter, God is talking about, He's bringing up the Babylonians. You remember how He described them? He gives us a pretty vivid picture of them as they're fierce, they're dreaded and feared. They have horses that are faster than leopards. They're keener than wolves. They're flying like eagles. There are hordes of them. These people come and they take captives like sand. And they're not afraid of any ruler. Matter of fact, they look at other rulers and they laugh. And you think, what a mighty nation. Who could ever bring down a nation so mighty as them? Well, I want you to notice what Habakkuk thinks about that in chapter 3. Notice his description of God. He says in chapter 3, beginning in verse 4, His radiance is like the sunlight. He has rays flashing from His hand, and there is the hiding of His power. Before Him goes pestilence, and plague comes after Him. He stood and surveyed the earth. He looked and startled the nations. Yes, the perpetual mountains were shattered. The ancient hills collapsed. His ways are everlasting. Notice the 10th verse. As Habakkuk goes on to describe God, the mountains saw you and quaked. The downpour of water swept by. The deep uttered forth its voice. It lifted high its sands. Sun and moon stood in their places. They went away at the light of your arrows, at the radiance of your gleaming spear. In indignation, you marched through the earth. In anger, you trampled the nations. You see what Habakkuk thought about God? Now, when we read about the Babylonians, they seemed pretty fierce. They seemed like a foe that would be unstoppable. But you know what? I don't know that you can top a God that marches through the earth and in His anger tramples the nations. You just can't top that. You want some real assurance as a righteous person? The God we serve is bigger than the greatest things known to man. Habakkuk recognized that. Isaiah recognized that. I don't want you to turn there, but I do want to remind you of a very similar thing that Isaiah said. In Isaiah chapter 40, he was prophesying about the kingdom to come. And he was very similarly talking about this this power, this might, this unstoppable force that is God. And he describes God as the one who has the ability to just weigh mountains on a scale. I don't know if any of you have done a lot of traveling out west. There's a lot that I haven't seen, but I understand that there are some of the mountain ranges out there that you just stand in just utter awe of because of their size and their beauty. And can you imagine standing at the foot of this mountain, overwhelmed by it, and just think about God could pick that mountain up and just weigh it on a scale. And Isaiah talked about the greatest nations are just like a drop in the bucket. They're like a speck of dust. They are nothing before Him. And he goes on towards the end of that 40th chapter, and he seems to kind of be reviving some hope in the righteous people. If you ever have a question about God and His existence and His power, he says all you got to do is look up. And you'll see the one that created the stars. And he calls them all by name. That's impressive. I don't just naturally love to get up early, but I do get up fairly early these days. And sometimes one of the first things I like to do is I like to go outside while it's still dark. And if there aren't clouds in the sky, you can just look up and you can just see the heavens alive. People, that's the God that we serve. And if you ever have a doubt as to the problems in this life and how they'll go away, just look up and see God for who He is and take comfort in that. Finally, there's salvation in God. And that's really the ultimate assurance. And Habakkuk mentions that. Notice as the letter closes out, chapter 3, verse 17. The final thoughts from Habakkuk. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls, yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He has made my feet like hind's feet, and makes me walk on high places. There may be a lot, there is a lot wrong in this world. And this world may trouble us from the day we're born till the day that we die. I've known some people that just seem to have trouble all of their life. But that's the thought that Habakkuk closes with. Nothing good is going on. There's nothing on the vine, there's no cattle in the stalls. Everywhere you look, there's just nothing's going right, it's not doing what it's supposed to do. Yet did you notice he still rejoices because there's salvation in God? You want your answer to every problem in life? Well, here it is. There is salvation in God. He says he's made my feet like hind's feet. I understand that to mean like the feet of a deer. And typically, prophets had a pretty dangerous job because they delivered a pretty unappealing message to the people and they didn't want to hear. God told Isaiah, you're going to go to people who close their eyes and stop up their ears. They're not going to kindly receive you. And there's evidence through the prophets that they were very poorly treated. And so maybe he gave him feet like a deer. He could deliver the message and escape. But I think Habakkuk is seeing a bigger picture than that. He's seeing an evil, wicked world. And that's troubling and that's distressing. But God has given me a way to escape. You ever see a deer get startled? And they just take off running. And they do it real gracefully. And those back legs just come up so high. And Habakkuk says, you've given me feet like that. I don't know if that's exactly what he means by that or not, but I like that idea. That God has given me the ability to escape a wicked, terrible place. God is a God of salvation. And that is assurance for righteous people. In chapter 2 and verse 14, there's something important pointed out by God. He points out in the midst of this what He's going to do to those wicked. He says, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Right now, there are a lot of people who don't understand that. But I think that passage says one day there's not going to be any mistaking who rules all. And then a few verses later, he uses that sarcasm about the idols built out of hands and can't breathe. And that's your teacher, that's what you're going to serve. I would imagine that among all the people here, the majority are righteous people. You probably wouldn't be here on a Wednesday evening if you weren't. But that doesn't guarantee you're righteous. You may just be here because it's what you've always done. And maybe somebody's making you come, or you just feel guilty. You wouldn't want to have to explain yourself if you didn't come. There may be somebody here that for that reason. What I want you to understand is we've talked about some really impressive assurances for righteous people tonight. But what needs to be impressed is these are assurances for righteous people. And so if you're here tonight and you're taking comfort in the fact that God can hear, and the fact that God is active, and the fact that God is big enough to overtake any problem, don't take any assurance if you're not a righteous person. But maybe we can help you make your life right with God tonight. Maybe you realize that you've been serving foolishness. It may not be some idol that you've carved out of your own hands, but maybe it's a job. Maybe it's a relationship that you don't have business being in. Maybe it's a career or a sport or just something else worldly, and that's really what you're pursuing. That's not going to get you any further than an idol that can't breathe or can't speak and can't teach. And so if there's someone here tonight who is not right with God, and you know what's keeping you from being right, why not change that? You may have walked in here tonight with no hope, with no assurance for anything good to come. But you know what? Within a matter of minutes, you can be rejoicing in the assurances of the righteous. And maybe you don't know exactly what it would take to do that. It'd be a perfect time to start asking some questions. What do I have to do to make my life right with God? Tim would talk with you. I know there are a lot of other men here who would just sit down and very clearly go through the Bible and say, this is what God requires for us to be right with Him. And so let me challenge you. If you're not right with God, start asking some questions. Now, maybe you already know the answers. Maybe you know that you got to get your sins out of the way, and you know that comes through your faith in God and baptism in the name of Jesus, and maybe you're ready right now to do that, and if so, do it now. But if we can help you in any way make your life right with God, why don't you come to the front and make that known as we stand and sing. Ring.